Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast that explores the creative and curious world of work through monologues and conversations with artists, creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and changemakers. You know that dream for your life that you lie in bed every night hoping it comes true? Not only is it possible for you, but you don't need all the details figured out before starting. And today's guest will tell you why. Brittany Wagner is a motivational speaker, best known for her role in the Netflix documentary series Last Chance You, and author of Next Chance You. In this conversation, Brittany shares powerful insights into shifting your mindset from last chance to next chance, overcoming bitterness and perfectionism with decisive action, and looking for ways to grow by devoting time and effort to improving one area at a time. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/553.
I am endlessly curious about our brains and how our experiences and our life, how the things that have, I guess, happened to us affect our brains, our development, our reactions. I am always up for a book or a podcast or a learning session on just how powerful our brains are. I think it's amazing. And I think that our mental health is important, and our brains and our mindset can really change and alter our physical abilities as well.
Ooh, yeah. I agree with you. I just read a book about anxiety in our brains and how curiosity can help us overcome anxiety. I thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting. I'm going to have to get that book title from you later.
It's called Unwinding Anxiety.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
That's my next read.
It's good. But I love that too, because, you know, our brains are really what guide our behavior in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think so. I think too, like, we've gotten so used to or so fixated on a quick fix, you know, mm-hmm. popping a pill or numbing things out. And I think really if we would stop and give ourselves a little bit more credit, there's so much that I think we could heal within our own selves just with the power of our brains. But I think we don't believe in that so much. And so we don't give ourselves enough credit.
Yeah. Where does your fascination with the brain and how that connects to your work begin at?
I think my dad probably. So my dad's a psychologist. yeah. And it's just one of those things, I think. But because he was always challenging me to think about the other person, you know, if I would, I'm very opinionated, and I still am, but I used to be a whole lot worse. And I would come home with these, you know, these arguments and opinions, and he would always kind of throw the other side of the story at me and say, you know, well, have you ever thought of what that person might have been through? Or have you ever thought about it this way? And he was always challenging me in that way. And so I think I started having this awareness at a very early age that we all have different experiences, and those experiences kind of, they do shape, you know, who we are and how we react and respond to certain situations. And then I just got really curious about, you know, what that means and what trauma does to our brains and how development changes based on poverty levels. And I took my dad's, you know, psychology 101 when I was 10 probably and ran with it.
It's so interesting to hear that too, because, you know, there's this idea of our experiences and how they affect us. And I'm curious how, when we go through traumatic and difficult experiences, how can we learn to be better from those instead of being bitter?
You know, I think that we have to, I think it's a choice. I think that we choose whether we're going to look at the bright side or whether we're going to sit in discomfort, pain, bitterness. And I think it's that simple as a start. Now, you know, I think then you have to find the silver lining in things. You have to look at, okay, but as bad as this experience might have been, and as painful as it might have been going through it, what did it teach me? What did I learn from it? How did it shape me? How am I better because of it? And I think when you can step back from the raw emotion and pain that maybe you're going through and you can see it from that lens, a lot of times you do realize that even painful experiences, they help us in some ways. They shape us differently in some ways, which brings us to exactly where we are and who we are. And I think, you know, I think it just, it takes perspective, but it also just takes making a choice that I'm not going to be bitter. I'm going to accept this and learn from it and be better because of it.
In your story, in your journey, where was a major decision point for you where you had to choose between the better choice and the bitter choice?
I've had tons of them. You know, I mean, I'm divorced, and I was, divorced with a young child, and there was that moment of, how could you do this to me type of thing. There was a moment of how this is too much, you know, it's too much to be a single mom. There's too much on me. It's too stressful. Your social life gets, as you knew it, kind of gets taken from you a little bit when you have a young child and you're raising that human being by yourself. And there's, you know, there was some bitterness there for me. I mean, I think in work, you know, I was an academic counselor, and I was working in the SEC, which some in this part of the world would argue is the biggest, you know, football conference in the United States. And here I was all of a sudden leaving that institution to go to East Mississippi Community College in Scuba, Mississippi to start a program there. And as much as maybe I wasn't aware of it at the time, I think there was some bitterness for me in the fact that I was there as long as I was. I think my original plan was, I'm going to go there, I'm going to do the absolute best that I can, and in 3 years, I'll be off to bigger and better things. And I was there for 8 years. And so, I think there's been a lot of opportunities in my life for me to sit back and be bitter or have an excuse. And sometimes it's taken me longer than others to find the silver lining and to stop the bitterness. But I think I've done a pretty good job of choosing to not be bitter.
What I appreciate about that is you're in incredibly challenging situations, from a divorce to professionally being in a place where you're like, they're so much longer than you anticipated.
Yes.
And yet you're open to those learning experiences. You're open to, what can I learn from this? And when you're working with players and students that no one else wanted,
yeah,
like, how does that start to change your mindset?
You know, I think honestly, it's been an ironic journey for me, because I think a lot of people after watching Last Chance U thought, you know, oh, she's saving these young men, or she's helping all these people, when in reality, I think I was the one getting the help. I think I was the one kind of being saved along the way in learning from those players. Every single one of them taught me something about myself or just about life in general that I don't think I would have learned otherwise. I think honestly, the main thing that I learned from myself in working with these types of athletes was that I wasn't that great. You know, I went into the job thinking I'm so great and I'm so successful and I've got this this fancy title and this salary and all and you know, yada yada yada. When in reality, when you're sitting across a desk from someone who's watched their father and mother be killed when they were 5 years old, and yet they got up every single day, they got dressed, they went to school, they kept fighting, they were homeless, they were hopeless, they had no idea what was in store for their life. And yet here they were as a freshman at a college with a football scholarship fighting for an opportunity. When you're sitting across from that day in and day out, you start to realize just how small you are you know, just how mediocre you are. Because I can tell you, if I had been through half of what some of the athletes I worked with had been through, there is no way I would have been standing where they were.
How did it show you a new way to fight for what really mattered to you when you're hearing these stories of how much they're fighting to survive and to live?
It touched me in such a way to realize that I had grown up my whole life with advocates. You know, my parents were my advocates, or my teachers at school, or my community, or my church. I had support, and I had love, and I had people surrounding me that were helping me. And when you look at the flip side of that, and when you have students sitting across from you really trying and really putting forth effort and really wanting to change the path of their life, and they have no one really helping them or supporting them. And I sat there and thought, you know, this is, it's not just sad. It's not fair. And so if I can help them in any way, if I can be an advocate, if I can be the one that stands up and says, you know what, this isn't right. And we need to do the right thing. Or, hey, let me just teach you what you don't know real quick. You know, I remember thinking, how did I know what a syllabus was? Like, here I was, a freshman in college, and like, how did I walk in a college classroom and just know what to do? And I knew what to do because I had parents and a sibling that had already gone to college, and I had a community where everyone had gone to college, and it had been ingrained in my brain. But when you have someone showing up and they have zero experiences with that setting, no one in their life has ever done it before, it's intimidating and it's scary. And even, you know, even for me to say, hey, okay, you're going to go in class today and they're going to hand you this packet of paper and it's called a syllabus and here's what it is. Don't get intimidated by it. You know, it's fine. You're going to be fine. Even that, I think, just minimizes the intimidation and gives those students who just don't know how to do it a little bit of support and help to say, hey, okay, she's, at least if I don't know what to do, I can come ask her, like, she's got my back. And I think that's important. I think it's important to know that you've got people surrounding you that have your back.
Yeah. Well, I love that too, because it's so easy to look at education and the world of academics as the privileged way of, oh, you know, is it really that impactful in someone's life? But when you look at it from where you've been and the perspective you've been able to bring and to see, it absolutely is transformational.
Yeah, I say it all the time. I say that, you know, education is more than curriculum. It's more than English and chemistry. It's social skills. You know, it's learning discipline, and it's learning how to get along with people that aren't like you, and it's learning how to respect authority and how to challenge authority, and it's really the first time in a person's life where you're kind of modeling behavior that you'll have to model as an adult. You know, there's a different level of responsibility when you reach that college education level, and it's kind of that first little trial period of, hey, this is what being an adult looks like. It's kind of the test run, honestly.
So, Brittany, you are known for your role on the Netflix documentary series Last Chance U. Can you tell me a little bit more about that experience?
I was an athletic academic counselor in Scuba, Mississippi, population 400. And we were a powerhouse football program that was putting out more players to Division I schools or the NFL than any other school in the country. And all of a sudden, GQ magazine got wind of kind of what we were doing, preparing these athletes for the next level on the field and off the field. And they wrote a feature story about us and about our program, which Netflix was at the time really still the streaming service, the only streaming service, and still just buying shows that were already on the air. They weren't in the business yet of having the original series, you know, Netflix original series. And so they were looking for stories that they could develop into a Netflix original series. And we somebody threw that GQ magazine down on a desk in the Netflix headquarters, and they said, yes, this is it. And so we were their second original series documentary behind Making of a Murderer. So their first sports documentary. And I mean, it was quick. It was quick. We got the call maybe in March about the show, about the idea. And then by June, they were in our offices filming.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a turnaround.
It is. And it's probably good. You know, now that I think about it, I think it was exactly how it was supposed to be, because I didn't have time to think about it. I didn't have time to think about the things that didn't really matter, which if I had been given time, I would have thought about what I was going to wear and my hair and, you know, all the things that especially we women, you know, think about. And so I think looking back, I think the fact that it was that fast allowed me to not think about those things and to just be exactly who I was, which I think ended up being the beauty of the show, that we were all just being exactly who we were.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it has to be a challenge when you're being filmed, because you're not only hyper aware of being filmed, but then I don't know how you wouldn't be in your head in that moment and trying to be present, but also trying to be aware of what you're saying. It has to be challenging.
Yeah, it is. And people ask me all the time, like, did you ever forget that there were cameras in your office, or forget that you were mic'd up? And you can't forget that there's a camera because it's right there. So I never forgot that I was on camera, but you do begin to form a relationship with the human beings behind the apparatus. You know, I mean, you do become friends with the camera operators and the sound techs and the producers. And so you start to kind of see past the camera and see the guy behind it. And then there were times where, you know, I felt like I was having a conversation with Luke, who was my cameraman, forgetting that, oh, he's filming this to be broadcast to millions of people. You know, so there is a little bit of that where the relationship with the crew becomes so special that you relax a little bit because of that.
That's so interesting. How was the experience for students as well?
You know, I think that it was similar for them. I think what's so ironic is here we were in rural Mississippi. I myself didn't have Netflix at the time. I was a single mom. I was struggling to just make ends meet, and that just was not in the budget, you know? And so I didn't have Netflix. I didn't really understand what Netflix was. I sure as heck had no experience being on a TV show. I, you know, it wasn't something that I ever thought would happen to me in my life. Right. And I think all the players, all the athletes and coaches, we were kind of all in the same boat of not really knowing what we were getting into. Mm-hmm. And I think that we all kind of thought, well, no one will watch this. Like, who's going to watch this show? So who cares? You know, here we go. We're going to do this. Nobody's going to see it. It's not that big of a deal. Because we just didn't know. I mean, we just were clueless. And so I think that really attributed to the genuineness of at least season one, was that we didn't know what we were getting into.
Yeah. I love that so much, because it speaks to, I think, the power of innocence. And I don't know if naivete is the right word, but it's like when we can just approach things from that spirit of just like, I don't know. I don't know what this is. You know, it just, I think that's how you get out of your head.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I look back, I think if I were on a show now, I think about all the things now that I would think about because I know, you know, and then I didn't know, and I wasn't worried about it. I really wasn't worried about it. And I think that's interesting for me in this whole book process too, because I'm that innocent and naive about writing a book. And I had no idea what I was doing. I had zero expectations for the process or the outcome. And So I think it's a very similar situation. And, you know, and it's interesting because if I were approached all over again now, knowing what I know now, I wonder if I would be as genuine, because now I know all the fallouts and the outcomes. Mm-hmm. So it is a very interesting spot for sure.
One of the things that I'm just really wrapping my mind around and even marveling at is the evolution of titles. So for example, Last Chance You has now become, for your book, Next Chance You.
When I was working in the college athletics sports world, you get funneled into that tunnel of eligibility being such a big deal, and the opportunities and the scholarships for these guys being the end of the world, which I don't want to make light of that, because for a lot of these kids, you know, it is their only shot or to get a college education and to go on for the next 4 years with life kind of provided for them, if you want to call it that. And so for a lot of the guys, yes, this where they were at East Mississippi, it was their last chance to get a football scholarship and to maybe go on and get 2 more years of a college education paid for. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't their last chance at being successful in life. Mm-hmm. And I think we were so wrapped up in the world of college athletics, mm-hmm, that we all bought in to the idea that, like, this was it, you know, this is it. Like, if they don't get this scholarship, then life is over. Mm-hmm. And as I came out of that world after the show and really kind of got my perspective back, I think I realized that while, yes, the college scholarships were important, and yes, they mattered and they were important to these guys, it wasn't their only shot at life. Because they're more than athletes, and there's an opportunity to do other things and to succeed at other things. And so it's not their last chance. And I kind of took that and I ran with it with the idea that no one is ever on your last chance. You know, if your eyes are opening and your breath is coming out of your mouth, none of us are ever on our last chance. We always have an opportunity. And I was getting emails from fans of the show saying, well, if I had had you in my life when I was in college, then maybe I wouldn't be in this spot. You know, maybe I would have been more successful, or maybe I would have done this. And I just thought, no, you know, no, like, what are you waiting for? Like, you have an opportunity today to be better, or to do these things that you are saying you would have done if I had been your counselor. And so that was really the idea of the book, was taking my advice or my experiences, the things that I had learned, I guess, during my time working with these athletes, and compiling it into a book that really is inspirational on selling the notion that every day is your next chance. You know, every day is your next chance to be better than the day before.
Yeah. I love that so much, because so much of society is telling us that we're essentially, you know, locked into who we are and what we are, you know, almost right, like that fixed mindset, Carol Dweck notion that you're born as you are, you can't grow. But I love next chance. Today's your next chance. Right. What are you going to do? I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would meet so many students, you know, here they are, freshmen in college, they're 18 years old, and they're stressed out because they don't know what they want to do with the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. And they have, there's this notion and this pressure that because they don't know what they want to major in and they don't know what they want to be when they grow up, that they're a failure, you know? Right. And I used to sit at the desk and say, like, y'all, I'm 35 years old and I just figured it out, like, yesterday. Right. I mean, none of us know what we want to do with the rest of our life. Right. We're all just faking it. It's okay. You know, and so I think that you're right. Like, we do, we put all this pressure on, mm-hmm, having it all figured out. And the reality and the truth is that none of us do. Mm-hmm. None of us have it all figured out. There is no such thing as experts. Like, nobody, nobody's got it all figured out. We are all just faking it till we make it. I mean,
that's right. 100%. 100%. And, you know, I'll add that, you know, it took me till I was 42 to really find it. So it's like, and I've heard people, they find it in their 50s, their 60s, their 70s, their 80s. And all of that speaks to that next chance mindset.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm 43 and I still every day wake up and go, well, have I gotten it right yet? I don't know. Yeah. We all, you know, we're all starting over in some way, whether you're in a job that you hate, you know, you chose a career at 18 because it's what your parents told you to do, but you really have no passion for it, whether it's a failed relationship, whether it's just the fact that you have been on a diet plan for 10 years and you haven't lost a pound. You know, like we're all sitting in a space with our next opportunity to do something that makes us better, that makes us, that helps us with the choice of being better rather than bitter.
And again, it comes back to the word you just said, choice. I mean, we have choices every single day. It just seems so obvious and yet so challenging at the same time. So how do we learn to make better choices and to, when we make decisions, not feel like they're going to be like, if we blow this, it's over?
I think first of all, we all struggle these days with the ability to truly show up. And so we're going through the motions, you know, we're checking the boxes of life, or we're documenting life and then filtering it so everyone else can see it through a lens of that's not reality. And in that process of documenting it, we're not actually living it, because we're doctoring it, you know, to look better than it actually is. And I think we've lost the ability to just show up honestly for our lives. And it's really hard to make a choice to do something when you're not actively living in that moment. And so I think that, you know, that's my first kind of, that's the first chapter of the book is show up. And that's, you know, and it's so much bigger than just showing up, you know. But I used to tell the athletes that, like, you have to go to class. Class attendance is not optional, because you're not going to make the best grade possible in a class that you will not even commit to going to. And I feel the same way about life. Like, we can't have these expectations of this life that we're not even actively living. And so I think we have to get real with ourselves about, are we really showing up? Right. And, you know, part of the book in chapter one, I talk about wicker baskets of our lives, you know, and what are the wicker baskets of our lives? Is one wicker basket your career? Is one wicker basket your personal relationships? Is one wicker basket your self-care? Like, what are the wicker baskets? What are the parts of our lives that are important to us? And then I think we have to really get honest with ourselves about, are we showing up equally to all of them? Because I think we have a tendency to show up for PE class, but skip chemistry.
Right.
And so we show up for the areas of our life that we want to, you know, right. Or that are easy. If that relationship is hard, then we really show up for work because we don't want to go home to the hard relationship. Well, then you don't get an A because you're skipping a part of your life that's also important. And so I think it's really important that we sit back and kind of figure out, like, what are the wicker baskets of my life? What am I showing up for? And what am I either consciously or subconsciously not showing up for in my life, and why? And I think that's where we start.
So from choosing and showing up, what are some other tools and tips for overcoming obstacles and developing a next chance mindset?
You know, I think that we have to have a plan. You know, we have to, you can't just say, like, oh, I'm going to change my life and then that be it. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that not much is going to change, right. You know, or to put it in a perspective of dieting, you know, people, when you say, well, I'm going to lose weight. Well, how are you going to lose weight? Well, I'm going to eat less. well, if that hasn't worked for you yet, then it's probably not going to start working for you today. So I think it starts with a detailed plan. You know, how exactly are you going to eat less or lose weight, or, you know, how much are you going to exercise? What exactly are you going to eat and when? There's that detailed plan that is super important whenever we're trying to do something different. If we don't really focus on what we're going to do different, we will revert back to doing what we've always done. And yes, what we've always done will not get us a different result. It's just not going to long term anyway. So I think it's really important to have that plan. I also think it's important to understand that having a plan does not have to equal perfection. Oh, I think sometimes, I think sometimes we get caught on the other side of that, mm-hmm, where we have a plan and we will not move forward because we are waiting for that plan to be perfect. We're waiting for the preparation to all be perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, I use the example in the book of couples that will say, like, well, we're not going to have a baby until we have the white picket fence, until we have $10,000 in savings, until our relationship is solid, until this. Well, they still haven't had a baby because because the until never comes, because there's no such thing as a perfect moment or a perfect space. And so I think we have to be really careful to stay in the guidelines of having a plan, but also recognizing that perfection is not going to exist, and we can move forward without having everything figured out. You know, we can move forward without having every I dotted and every T crossed and still be okay. It's okay to make mistakes. You know, they're going to happen, and that's okay. I also think it's super important to understand that we can change, we can grow. You know, we're not all born with all the qualities that we need to be successful at every single thing. Mm-hmm. And I use the example of myself in the book about this, and how I had hit a brick wall in my time as an athletic counselor, and I thought, like, I just wasn't effective. Mm-hmm. And I started looking at, okay, what qualities do I think the best athletic counselor would have? Like, what qualities would a great counselor have? And mm-hmm, I listed them. Mm-hmm. And then I circled the ones that I thought I had and that I thought I was doing a good job at. And then I looked at the rest and I said, okay, here's five qualities that I don't think I possess. Does that make me unable to do the job? You know, does that make me a failure? No. And so I picked one and I said, okay, so for the next year, I'm going to focus on growing this quality in myself. That is going to be that's my only quality I'm worried about. But I'm going to focus for one solid year on doing everything I can do to create this quality that I currently don't possess. And ironically enough, that quality was patience. And if you watch the show or Google me and read any article written about me, the number one word used to describe me after Last Chance You came out was patient. And that was my quality. And I had spent the year before we started filming the show, I had spent that year developing that quality in myself. And that's just proof that we can do that. You know, we have the ability to change the pathways in our brain and to change our reactions and to change our responses to be something different than we've always done. Mm-hmm. And it's just figuring that out, sitting down and being intentional about what is it that I need to change, and then really focusing on how I'm going to do it, and then doing it every single day, practicing it every single day until it's habit.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Two things just right out of the gate. So, like, when you said you need a plan, but you don't need it to be perfect, you don't know the relief that I have personally when I hear that. Cause, like, I'm working on something right now and, like, I've got a plan. I know exactly what I want to do. And I'm just wrestling with this perfectionism. And so thank you for that, because it's just like, that's just a really good reminder of just how perfectionism can stop your plan.
Yeah. I think, again, that's a society thing that we've, and that maybe it's due to social media and looking at what we perceive as everyone else's perfection, which is a lie because it's filtered to look that way. I think we all kind of feel stuck sometimes in waiting for everything to be, you know, handled and everything to be fixed and everything to look great before we move forward. Mm-hmm. And I think that's prohibiting us from being our best self, honestly.
I agree. And one of the ways that a friend of mine helps me get through it is she'll ask me, how can you give a B- effort?
Yeah.
And it just helps me kind of break out of that mindset of like, I got to go for the A. And it's just like, you know, sometimes the better result is you give everything that you've got and you still get a B-.
Absolutely. And I used to tell athletes all the time, look, you have strengths and you have weaknesses. So you're not always going to get a C. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be some, you'll get it. You're going to get an A in this because this is your strength, and you're going to get a C in this because this is your weakness. And guess what? The balance is a B.
Yeah.
Like, come on, you know, every single detail isn't that important because it all balances itself out. If you're balancing the good with the bad or the A with the C, it's all going to balance out in the middle. It's when we're too heavy on one side, you know, that we become imbalanced and stressed out.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. The other thing that I am so blown away by is when you described the things that you want to work on and you pick one and you work on it for a year. I think that is an invaluable tool for growth. And I just thank you for that, because oftentimes I hear from people like, well, how do you keep growing? How do you keep learning? And I think that's an excellent tool for identifying where you can grow and dedicating yourself to growing in that area.
Yeah, I think so. I think sometimes we get fixated on all the things we need to do, you know, all the things. We're not perfect. And then let's look at all these things that I've got to do to be a better person or to be fill in the blank. When let's just look at the next thing. Like, let's just pick one and work on one and celebrate the small successes of that one. Because a lot of times when you do that, And you focus on one and you see yourself getting better in that one area, there's other areas tied to that. And so these other things will start to get better too. You know, as I became patient and as I started working on being patient, I realized that when I got home, I was a better mother because I wasn't stressed out all day, you know, yelling and screaming and having all high blood pressure and, you know, getting angry and getting mad and focusing on every small thing these athletes did and beating them up for it. I wasn't coming home with that stress and anxiety. I was appreciating, I sent him to buy books and he came back with headphones and that's okay because we'll get the books tomorrow, you know, and it just made me calmer and more relaxed. And so then I walked in the door and I was a better mother because of it, which was not really an expectation of mine. I was working on qualities to be better at work. But what you don't realize is when it relaxes other parts of your body and your brain. And when it becomes a habit, period. Mm-hmm. So I found myself also being more patient with my own child because I had developed this quality that you can't really turn off and on.
Right. Oh, that's excellent. So what is the one thing that you're working on this year?
You know, I picked a word. What year was it? Jeez, before COVID, I guess. I decided that every year I was going to pick a word.
Nice.
And like that word was going to be my focus. And so I think it was 2019 that I picked action there was so much that I talked about was I doing it? You know, was I just talking about it or was I actually doing it? And so I think I'm still a little bit in that space of making sure that my words match my actions. And I'm still in that space. I also have found myself really trying my best to choose joy and to choose happiness rather than, cause, you know, especially now, you look all the things, you know, COVID and then the hurricanes and the weather and people losing their jobs and just feeling like there's just so much negativity, the you know, social injustices and just feeling like there's so much negativity. And I'm really trying to focus on finding the silver linings and finding joy and not getting so bogged down in just negative energy, you know, and the negativity that is out there, because I think that we contribute, our energy contributes to greater energy. So when we walk in a room, the energy that we bring into the room contributes to the energy of the room. And I don't want to walk in a room and make it more negative. I want to walk in a room and bring a little bit of a positive energy into it. And so I've really been focusing on what showing up in that way, in a way where I can be proud of the energy that I bring to the space.
Yeah, that's so excellent. Where does your joy come from?
Honestly, I get joy out of self-care. You know, I get joy out of taking time to make sure that I'm okay. And for me, that involves working out, you know, taking care of my physical health. That involves some, for me, a lot of times, silence and just that alone time. I've gotten to where when I drive in the car, very rarely do I turn the radio on. If I'm in the car alone, I just enjoy silence and that space. And I think just freeing my body and mind of noise for me helps me to be grateful. And when my brain stops, I tend to focus on what I'm grateful for. And I think stopping and taking a minute to realize that, you know, it's raining outside. Gosh, it's a dreary day, but man, my grass needs watering. I'm so grateful that my grass got watered today. You know, when you sit in that space of just being quiet, and it allows me more space to just find gratitude. And I think stopping and finding gratitude for me leads me to a path of just being joyful.
So you went from being an academic counselor to starting your own company?
I did. I did. And that alludes to my point of not having all things figured out, which is a big section in the book, because I tell the story of sitting on my bedroom floor with a piece of paper and a pencil. And I had a few speaking gigs. People were starting to reach out and wanting me to speak. And so I had a few already booked, and I got a piece of paper and a pencil out, and I started writing down the speaking gigs that I already had booked and how much I was going to get paid. And then I wrote down all my expenses, and I figured out that, okay, I had enough money, or would be making enough money through these speaking gigs to pay my bills for 6 months. And I took that math that I did on a sheet of notebook paper and a pencil, and I said, okay, then I can start my own company, and I can make this work for 6 months. And in that 6 months that I can pay my bills, I got to be good. I got to make this thing work, because after 6 months, if I haven't made this work, we don't have any money. And that was it. That was really it. Like the formation of, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to quit my job, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to take this platform that I've been given, and I'm going to expand on it. You know, I remember thinking that I needed a website, and then I called around and started getting prices and realized I couldn't afford a website. So I got on, you know, one of the make your own website.coms and made my own. And I pieced it together until I got to a point where I could perfect it. if I had waited until it had all worked itself out and it was, and all the makings of owning your own company were in order, I'd still be waiting. Because I've had this company for 4 years and it's still not perfect. And there's still things that don't work right and that don't, that I don't love, that, you know, and it's a work in progress. But I sat down and I thought, what do I have to do? Like, what's the most important thing? And the most important thing was knowing that I could live and feed my child. And I did that. And I thought, okay, you know, what am I going to talk about when I get on stage? And I got to have a way for people to contact me. And do I even want to do this? And I hit the high points of the things that were necessary. And then honestly, I went with it. And it was scary. I was scared to death. And I did not have it all figured out, but it worked. And here I am.
That's awesome. How did collaboration enter the picture for you?
I got on my social media because when the show came out, my social media exploded. And I had all these direct messages, DMs from people that I wasn't even reading because I just couldn't. I mean, I didn't have time to read any of it. And so that I started just going back through all my direct messages and reading them. And I realized I had a lot of business in my direct messages. I had people that were messaging me saying like, hey, we want to hire you and we'll pay you this amount of money to come speak. Or we'd like to hire you to work with athletes here at this school. And so I started going back through my messages and figuring out like, okay, who's my clientele? Like, who are the people that are reaching out to me? And, you know, I started with building my own website and kind of getting the concept. And then I found myself, I was in Birmingham, Alabama, which is now where I live. And I went to a coffee shop one morning. I was going to sit down and just kind of be by myself and do some work, some planning. And I met these two guys that were fans of the show and introduced themselves to me and asked me like, well, what are you doing now? And I think I threw out some kind of joke because I was like nothing. And he said, well, what do you want to do? And I told him, and he said, well, then do it. You know, and I was like, well, you know, I did what everybody, well, and all of a sudden, ironically enough, the two guys, one was a technology guru and brand marketing genius, and the other was a small business consultant. And right then, like, that was it. I mean, I sat down and over, you know, cups of coffee, I developed, like, a logo was developed, and here he was going to take my website that I had made myself and turn it into something spectacular. And here was the small business consultant writing up contracts that I could send to clients to sign and telling me, you know, how I should get half of the payment up front and half of the payment. Cause I had no idea what I was doing. And here, you know, here he was kind of helping me, walking me through. Ironically enough, he's my business manager still today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but it's just interesting how I think when you make the decision to go for something and you put it out into the universe in a humble way, in a I want to do this, but I don't have it all figured out, but I'm going to go for it type of way, I think the universe sends you back pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And here I was putting it out that I want to do this. I want to start my own company. I want to travel and be a motivational speaker. I want to be able to impact as most people that I can, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm scared to death. And all of a sudden it was like the universe just kept sending me people to help me.
So as we come to the end of our time together, you know, what's one thing that you hope people will take away from our conversation?
To go for it. You know, to just believe in yourself and believe in your ability to do whatever it is that you want to do. And I think when we make that decision, when we decide like, this is who I want to be, this is what I want to do, I'm going to go for it, I'm really going to show up for myself, a beautiful thing happens in that we no longer care about the feedback of the critics because we've bought into it ourselves. You know, I think a lot of times we care so much what other people think about us when we haven't really showed up for our own selves yet. But when we're really showing up for our own selves and we're really invested in ourselves and we're going for it in life, I really think that that's the corner, that's the turn where everybody else's opinion stops mattering so much. And there's a joy and a happiness and a stress reliever in that.
Well, Brittany, last question for you. What book, podcast, or resource is currently blowing your mind right now?
Okay, currently, this will not be a shocker to anyone. Currently blowing my mind right now is a book by Dr. Bruce Perry and Oprah Winfrey. It is called What Happened to You? It is about the effects of trauma and experiences on our brain and in our development, and then how that plays out into our lives. And it really brings up the question of, instead of asking other people or even asking internally ourselves, what's wrong with you? You know, that's our question when we see people not behaving the way that we want them to behave, or, you know, what's wrong with you? And I think we ask ourselves that question a lot of times in life, like, what's wrong with me? You know, I can't do this, or I haven't been able to do this. What's wrong with me? And if we would stop that mentality and change the question to, what happened to you? You know, what has happened to you in your life to get you to this spot of being so angry? Or what's happened to you in your life to get you to the place that you are today, where this is your reaction? Because it must be awful. You know, whatever it is, it must have been traumatic and it must have been painful. And when we approach people and our own selves, you know, what has happened to me in my life that has stopped me from having confidence and from believing in myself? I think when we approach our own selves and other people with that question, we show up with empathy, you know, and we show up with an understanding, we show up with some tolerance, and we start to listen. Because you can't ask a question of, you know, what happened to you, and then not want to hear the answer. Like, you,
right.
And so we listen. And then when you stop and you listen and you hear the stories of what actually has happened to people that is creating who they are today, if you're honestly open to hearing it, it changes you. It changes you. And so I am fascinated right now by that book. And there's also Brené Brown had both of them on her podcast, which I'm a huge Brené Brown fan, but Brené Brown had both of them on her podcast, and it's an amazing episode where I feel like Dr. Perry goes into more detail than he even gives in the book about just how much trauma affects our lives and how small traumas add up to be big trauma as far as our brain is concerned, and how that affects our lives and our responses. And it's a fascinating book for me right now.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Brittany as much as I did. There were so many amazing thoughts to take in and explore, and I hope that you'll pick up her book, Next Chance You. Be sure to head to gettingworktowork.com if you want more interviews with people like Brittany. You'll also find the entire backlog of episodes, including monologues and interviews, all the way back to episode 1. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.